This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Today on Dreamland, we have a guest, Lori. You will not hear her last name, although some of you are going to recognize her, who has had a more than a lifetime of experience. She comes from a family of close encounter witnesses, and recently she's been having very unusual experiences with major changes. And I think it's important that we talk about this. I've noticed that the government people, the congressmen anyway, are finally getting to know something about what's going on. Tim Burchett recently said that he was aware of, had been told by someone in the government that we have interacted with aliens and that they visited. And, you know, these guys are not interested in talking to the experiencers, as far as I can tell. I've tried to contact them all. I sent my book to them, to the entire Senate Select Intelligence Committee, and got no response whatsoever. They're only interested in talking to people inside the envelope of the government. In other words, people who don't actually have much of an idea what's going on. So here we are, folks, out here on a limb and being ignored by the government that is supposed to be ours and is belongs to somebody, anybody, as long as it's not the close encounter witnesses. Okay, now, off of the soapbox, and let's welcome Lori to Dreamland. Lori, I'm so pleased that you were willing to come on the show. And folks, fasten your seatbelts, because this is going to be a bumpy ride. We're not going to take a break now. So welcome, Lori.
Thank you, Whitley. Glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. Well, let's start at the beginning. And this is a long family affair. What are the first stories that you remember hearing about this experience in your family?
Sure. And I'll briefly tell you that this probably goes back beyond the four generations that I know of. You can look up the ancestral family where the Questenbergs of Germany, and they were powerful pagans who later became titled peerage royalty in Germany. But they had a castle and worshipped something called the Questenbaum, Q-U-E-S-T-E-N-B-A-U-M. And it's a ritual that happens in the spring, and it's been happening since 1100 AD. So that's my family. My first story that was related to me by my mother and her sister is that during World War II in the 1940s, I believe it was around 1944, my grandparents lived in a place called Max Meadows in Virginia, which is a suburb of Wytheville, Virginia, which has had its own flaps in later years. And they were walking home from church over the side of a mountain, and they came to a crest. And my mother said that out of the sky shot down like a gold orb, you know, about this big. And it looked at my grandfather, my grandmother. My grandfather was holding my mother in his arms. She was 4 years old. My aunt was in between her parents. They were holding hands. So it looked at each one of them and then shot back up into the sky. So that's the first encounter.
that was when?
Circa 1944 or 1945. I know my mother moved to Ohio in late 1945. So that's a pretty good time frame.
Okay, and that the first recorded encounter in the family.
Correct.
Well, you know, I was not aware of the Questenbaum, but I'm remembering it's a fertility. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Sure. There's two interpretations that hold sway out there. And I will tell you that the symbol has been abused by some hate groups, which really bothers me. But it is definitely either a fertility symbol or the ancient sun wheel. So one of the two. There's a there people can go online and look up. There's a story about this castle lord who loses his daughter. She disappears in the woods and is gone for several days, and then she reappears. Someone brings her back to the castle, and that he started this ritual as a nod, as a thanks to the gods, to the heavens, for bringing his daughter back. So
Baum's a
that's what I know.
tree. Yeah.
It's
Baum.
you, yes, you remember a lot. Yes, it's
Well,
actually
I know. I
based
just know
on
a
a.
little tiny bit of German, and I know a Baum is a tree. I'm
Yes.
not remembering
So
a
they
lot.
cut off, so they put a new one up every year, and they cut down an oak, and they use the core of the tree, and then they put this big wreath on top of it, and then there's two like corn stalk things that are out. It's like a cross symbol in a circle, and then the big tree as the base. Yes.
And the ritual goes back. It's a very old folk ritual, and
Very old.
the relationship with oaks goes way back in Germany, long back into the days of the Germanic tribes were still, very primitive, back thousands of years.
Yes.
So it's a it it's it it comes out of the deepest of forest mysticism in Germany. And now here these people come, they're in America, and I have thought, I've never really explored this very much, but back when we were assembling the communion letters, we noticed a lot of people in the groups seem to have last names that were related to Ireland and Scotland. And my wife Anne was Celtic. She had Celtic blood in her. I don't think I do, but I thought to myself, the Greys are, if you read the old fairy literature, the Greys are like the fairy folk. They look the same. And I thought to myself, maybe the Irish brought them here to the United States. And I'm wondering if your family brought something from Germany.
Well, interesting that you bring up Ireland because I'm a super nerd, and I own that. I wear the mantle. I've done a lot of DNA genealogy, and there is a scholarly website called GEDmatch, and you can take your DNA strip and upload it into their program as long as you're not a criminal, because that's how they trace criminals through this site. And they have all kinds of matches where you can go into, and I poured my DNA into an ancient portal, and they take the bones of ancient retrieved people like Otzi the Swiss man is there, Clovis man is in there, and then there's one called Balnahatty Lady, Balnahty, and I am related to her in Northern Ireland. She was found in Belfast, so I
Tell us a
carry.
little bit about her history.
I don't know anything about her history other than what I've been able to glean off the web, and it's very sparse. But she was buried with two other men that were not of Celtic origin. But they believe her to have been a princess. They believe her to have been a princess. And I think that the bones are about 5,500 years old.
Gosh. That's awesome. Yeah, I ought to do that. I don't even know where to get my genes, though.
Oh, it's so fascinating. It's that could take you down a rabbit hole that you could stay for weeks.
That's not unusual in my life.
Yeah.
Tell us all about how would we acquire the genes necessary to
Well,
do
so
this?
if you did your DNA on any of the public, there's MyHeritage, 23andMe, Ancestry.com. If you've done your DNA there, I can't tell you where it is, but there on the settings, there's a button that will allow you to download the string into your computer, you know, as a file, and then you go to GEDmatch and upload that to their files. And you can go, you can find relatives all over the globe. You can find connections to parts of your DNA that you didn't know. I'm a very unusual character, and I don't mind talking about this. My father was 50% Finn from Finland. So I always used to joke and call him a tall white. And he was 50% what they call Rusyn, a very rare ethnic group that lived in between Ukraine, Poland, and Slovakia. And then on my mother's side, all kinds of stuff, the German, very Irish, but then two very interesting things came up. And these had been talked about in my family lightly. I'm 2.5% Native American, and you'll get a kick out of this. My Native American ancestor is Chief Cornstalk. Have you ever heard of him?
No, I have not.
He was the Ohio chief of the Shawnee, and he is supposedly the source of the myth behind the Mothman. The curse is about Chief Cornstalk, my sixth great-grandfather.
How bizarre and wonderful.
It's incredible. And through him, his grandfather, so my husband is a nautical maritime archaeologist. And I walked into my husband's room one day and I said, "Did you ever hear of a man named Martin Chartier?" And he said, "Oh my God, he's one of the most famous Great Lakes explorers." That was Chief Cornstalk's grandfather. So all these different stories.
That's wonderful. My entire background is soldiering military people all the way back to the Crusades.
Yeah.
My family was in the Crusades. I mean, if you look at my family history, it's all soldiers. But go ahead.
Well, and we have some of those too in my history. We had Knights of Malta in the Questenberg family. On my mother's side, again, my mother's family, both sides of it, her mother and her father's families, were the first, one of the first 100 white families in the colonies. The two grandfathers I've been able to trace extensively were both born in the 1600s in the colony of Virginia. So we've been here a long time, long time.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, now let's return to the brief description of the first sighting experience and unpack that a little bit. Can you?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit more about who it was and exactly where it was.
Well, and this wasn't a who or what. I was 6 years old and I saw the Kecksburg explosion.
You saw. Tell us about that. Now, this is
intriguing. So when the Kecksburg craft ended up crashed in Pennsylvania, it came through the atmosphere and created this extraordinary, it was twilight, it was December. I was in the rumble seat of my parents' station wagon, my sister and I, on a road that faced due north and south. I was looking north, and as I looked north, the sky exploded in what looked like thousands and thousands of fireworks. Just the whole sky lit up. And my parents obviously saw it in their rear view mirrors. Didn't scare me in the least. I'm a very peculiar woman. I'm not scared by much. And my sister and I went, "Wow, that's incredible." And my dad told me about it, you know, once the news came on. It left a debris trail through five states, including Ohio. And that debris trail came just north of us, right on Lake Erie, right at the beginning of Lake Erie. So that was intriguing. 6 months later, I'm at home looking due north again. So I would have been about 6.5, and a blue orb about this big again shot down out of the sky and was hovering in front of my bedroom window. And I was just mesmerized by it. What I now think from reading what I read, I don't know, did I get a download? Quite possibly. but it was there for a good 20 minutes that I can remember. And the rest of my childhood was almost mystical. I had a huge affinity for animals. Animals would show up on our front porch, wild animals, strays, the whole nine yards. I spent most of my days in the woods like a feral child. And so the ongoing theme of my life is environmentalism. I would much rather be, with my feet in the ocean or my head in the sky or in a deep wood. So the what you said about the fairies is very interesting to me. And I never equated that. So I like that.
So you have a relationship in a way that's similar to the relationship that your distant relatives must have had to the woodlands. And on
Yes.
that note, folks, we're going to take a brief break and we'll be right back. And subscribers, do take a look at Transformation 2026. It's out there. You'll find everything on Amazon, and should certainly become part of your life, because if this expands and deepens, this whole business of contact that we're talking about today, you're probably going to be part of it, because most of you who listen to this show or watch this show have had close encounter experiences. That's why you're here, or want to have them. That is something we'll discuss soon. Okay, we'll be right back.
There are signed copies of my books now in the unknowncountry.com store. Communion, Transformation 2026, The Fourth Mind, Them, A New World, and Afterlife Revolution are all available right now, signed copies. How do you get them? Go to unknowncountry.com, go to the unknowncountry.com store, click on Whitley's Books, and you'll find all of the signed copies available right there for immediate shipping.
The president has directed the Defense Department to release all of its documents involving UFOs and aliens. There are rumors that this might actually happen, and even that they might tell the truth. If you read the Whitley Strieber Substack or my most recent blog on unknowncountry.com, I explain exactly why. But if it does happen, does it also mean direct contact with aliens from more people? What happens if they come into your life, your children's lives? It's not going to be abductions like it was in the past. It's going to be a very different experience, something much more like what happened to my family after the communion experience. I wrote two books about it, Transformation and Breakthrough. They were beaten to death by the media and not much read, but they remain the only chronicle of such an experience that has ever been put into print. They're a blueprint for how to make contact work, and it can work, and that is certainly very important. Governments come and governments go, but the visitors are going to be in our lives from now on, forever. So how do we handle this? Is it good? Bad? Are we in danger? Or at the start of something wonderful? Find out how one family made contact work in Transformation 2026, the massive update to the original book, available now on Amazon.com. We're talking to Laurie, a generational close encounter witness who has a very deep family background that's embedded in ancient German mysticism and Irish mysticism, and is rather typical of people who have contact. And why would that be? Laurie, do you have any idea? We were just sort of beginning to discuss the possibilities of this being related to the earlier things like the fairy folk. And there's also lots of, in Germany, there's lots of traditions, similar traditions And then there's the kobolds in the mines of Bavaria and so forth. So tell us a little bit about, have you thought about these things at all, or?
I have. I mean, I'm intellectually curious, extremely intellectually curious. I've read Joseph Campbell and The Power of Myth, and I look at all these mythical stories that run currents all through our world. And I've always felt that I had something that was speaking to me, whether it was an entity, whether it was a movement. When you talk about Carl Jung and the collective unconscious, I get that. To me, that it speaks to me, it sparks thoughts. And I do, at this age that I'm at now, I have 150 to 1,000 questions about why me, why I've had these encounters, and am I a part of some bigger picture?
I think we all share that question, those questions. So after the Kecksburg incident, was there anything further that happened in your life that seemed related to it?
It's happened throughout my life, and it seems to go in decades. So I want to park for 1 second and quickly tell you that 4 years after Kecksburg, my town had a mass sighting of a craft, about 100 people, and a young man with great foresight wrote to Project Blue Book, and so our town is one of the last entries in Project Blue Book. So
Wow.
I think
And how
that,
old were
yeah,
you then?
I would have been 9 years old.
Nine.
And,
So
and I'm live.
it's so the
Go ahead.
go ahead. The fact
I'm
that
living
you
in.
were.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm living in the house I was born in. I was an army brat. My father was working at Fort Knox doing top secret experiments for the government that went up with the primates in space. So I have lived on and off in this house my entire life. So it was my grandparents' house when I was growing up. I was 9 years old when that mass sighting happened, and I've tracked down most of the people that are still living from that time. So then, fast forward, I'm starting re to recover memories. So I don't want to go deeply into those until I wrap my head around. If you ever want me back, I can talk more about that. When I'm 19, so 9 years later after the mass sighting in my town, I'm driving my sister home from high school volleyball practice, October 1979. And I did report this, and I cannot remember now whether I reported it to New Fork or MUFON. We were driving up the hill at the top of the road where I'm at now, and 2 miles from the house I'm living in now, we encountered a very large craft. It was big enough that it filled both sides of the road, and it was hovering 50 feet off the ground. Intense light, Whitley. I mean, like sunlight bright. And at the time, I just remember getting out of the car and going, "Wow." And I looked over at my sister and I said, "Are you seeing this?" And she nodded her head. And I don't know if she got out of the car too. I now, years later, have deduced that we had missing time, and probably maybe 20 minutes or more of missing time. And then by the time I got back in the car, the craft suddenly went up a few feet and then silently shot away. Now, I told you I'm the daughter of a chemical engineer. I drive. To I was living with my dad at that time. I drive to my dad's house and we call regional air traffic control in Oberlin, Ohio. And back then you could do that. And I said, "I just encountered something in the skies over my town. I want to know if you picked anything up on radar." They didn't make fun of me. They didn't laugh. They said, "Let us check. No, we don't really see anything." I said, "Well, thank you for your time." Then I looked at my sister and I said, "Well, there's one other thing I could plausibly think this could have been." I mean, I knew it wasn't, but I wanted to go through the motions. And I called Goodyear Aerospace, where all the blimps are, 30 minutes south of us. And I said, did you have any blimps up in the air tonight? And he laughed at me and he said, no, don't you remember what month this is? And I said, oh yeah, it's fall, it's October. He said, all of our blimps are in Florida. So, you know, I talked to my sister briefly. We agreed that we both saw what we saw. You know, this is my story and I try to keep privacy for my family. So, you know, I will tell you that she won't speak of it now. She refuses to speak about what we saw, which made me very lonely for a long time. And I would have dreams after this, or at least what I thought were dreams. And in my dreams, I saw my mother, my sister, and I in a craft, and we were in cylinders. And in the center of the room, it looked like a cafeteria. And I couldn't really make out the figures, but they were human-shaped. And that has stayed with me for years. And I don't know if that happened that night because my mother wasn't in the car with us. But to this day, and I have a photographic memory, so I can pull this up in my head and actually see my mother, my sister, and I in cylinders in a craft. So, and, you know, there's a lot of things like this that are floating back to me through those years. So that was in 1979. My 20s and 30s were pretty normal and weird. I became the mother of two children, got a divorce, went into the world of Wall Street and did very well for myself. And I met my husband in 1999. The first thing that happened in 1999 was our first date was hiking and kayaking in the Everglades, which does not sound like a normal first date, but it was quite amazing. And I married Crocodile Dundee, so it was fun. But we were sitting at the campfire the first night, and I was sitting cooking hot dogs over an open fire, and he was standing up with a beer in his hand, and he gently pulled my arm and pulled me up and then tilted my.
Okay, folks, we've had a glitch, and Lori will be back with us in a moment. She will be in a completely different and, frankly, much cooler background because she's now on another computer. And as those of you who are in the Close Encounter community know, when two Close Encounter witnesses talk together, especially when at least one of them has recently had experiences, the electronics go berserk. And so now one computer is not working, and she's on the other computer. Lori, welcome back, and let's keep going.
Yep. So I don't know where I left you. I think I left you at two years of quiet, and then seeing a UFO on my first date with my now husband of 27 years.
And that's right.
And it was funny because I thought, oh God, this is our first date. I'm going to have to tell him. So I said, well, this is uncomfortable, but I need to let you know that this is not unusual for me. This has been my whole life. And he laughed and he said, not mine. He said, I've never had anything like this happen. And when I met him, he was very rigidly scientific. But, you know, and conversations about Chris is for another time, of very interesting life and background. But anyway, so we saw that UFO. He reported that to MUFON. He wrote a detailed report. He comes from a very big military background. His brother-in-law was the base commander of a big Air Force base, a two-star general, and actually flew the plane that he had flown in battle, flew it to the Air Museum at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So interesting aside. Anyway, so we made this report. The craft was doing very high level, crossing the sky. Then it would do a 90 degree up, come back down, over again, different angle. And then at the end of it, it was about a 5-minute encounter, and dark skies in the Everglades at that time. Very dark skies. And then it shot up and it was gone. So that was the beginning of my relationship. So, and he was
When
living
you
in
say
Miami and I was.
relationship, you mean your relationship with your husband?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So he was living in Miami. He was a native of Miami, and I was living in Cleveland. So we were flying back and forth to see each other. In August of that year, I was at home at my townhouse, and I love to read, and I love to read in bed, and I love thunderstorms, just love thunderstorms. So it was a trifecta for me. So I'm in bed reading one night, big storm. Big thunder boomers, big flashes of lights. And as I'm reading, there was a colossal, and in that flash of light that followed it, I saw a tall gray standing in my bedroom. So
Oh my.
I'd never seen a being before. And again, this is Lori, the curious one. I just kind of laughed and I'm like, what are you doing here? What's this about? And to this day, I can see that figure. I know how high I measured my window afterwards. I know how high he was standing in relation to the window. So I'd say, when I say tall gray, maybe 6 feet, maybe feet, 6 feet tall. Now, the interesting thing is, it never moved. It was standing there in the room. And, I mean, do we think about male, female? I don't know. Whoever or whatever it was standing there watching me. And I don't remember much after that. I don't know if I fell off to sleep, whether I was put to sleep, what happened. But that happened, just a short time after we had seen this craft in the Everglades. And I thought, what kind of a life am I leading here? What's this about?
Yeah.
But I went back to my day-to-day life. I mean, what do you do? I mean, I've read your book, and by the way, after that encounter, your book was a lifesaver for me. I
Oh,
read it
good. I'm
back to
glad.
back, over and over, for understanding, to make sense of what had happened. And just, I unpacked it and then I packed it up and put it in the corner and that's where it stayed. Chris moved in with me 2 months later. And then a year later, we bought my grandparents' house, the house where I'm living now. We moved in 2000 and then the fun began. In 2001, so for 3 years, all of 2001, all of 2002, and all of 2003, I started having small grays, worker bees, coming to visit me at least twice a week for 3 years.
My
And
goodness, now listen. Well, wait a minute, Lori. We're going to take our second break here, folks, and then we're going to come back to listen to Lori tell us about these visitations. We'll be right back.
You know, there's an incredible website in this world. You're listening to its podcast or watching it right now. It's unknowncountry.com. Founded by Ann Streber in 1998, it is a huge repository of information about the Edge, practical, clear, carefully presented, not a bunch of nonsense, but the truth about the Edge. The things that we really don't know, don't understand, and the right paths to go down to find the answers to those mysteries. UnknownCountry.com is absolutely unique in the world. And not only that, it's a load of fun to go on that website and just explore. So go to UnknownCountry.com, follow the news every day, because it is a great website and the news is hard-hitting and extraordinary. You're welcome, if you're a subscriber, to comment on any story, any podcast. You're welcome also to come to the Wednesday night chat room, which I usually attend myself. It's a wonderful place. So subscribe. Keep it going. $4.95 a month is not a lot of money these days. Should be more, frankly, but it's not. So do it today. Go to unknowncountry.com. click on the subscribe tab. Help keep this marvelous, extraordinary project going. We need it more right now than ever before.
We're talking to Lori. We are just at the beginning of a period of visitations that starts in 2000. I know this story already, but my seatbelt is still fastened. Go ahead, Lori.
Yeah, so, and the first, I specifically remember the first encounter because I'm lying in bed and I sleep on the right side of our bed. My husband's a little OCD, so I always sleep on the right side of the bed. And I just roll my head over to the side. And again, I think I have unusual reactions, Whitley. I started giggling. I'm like, what are you doing here? I mean, this is absurd. And it was just standing there, hands at its side, looking at me. And I don't remember much other than me asking the question, what are you doing here? And then, you know, sleep ensues or hypnosis or whatever.
Or then they did whatever they were doing there and you don't remember it.
Correct. And they would come back and it was always singular. It was never more than one. Singular beings every time. And they just show up on my side.
Tell us a little bit about them. What did they look like?
So, you know, at the time, I wasn't into ufology or into beings. Back then we called them aliens. Now they call them NHIs and God knows what else. But big head, small body, and standing no more than 3 feet tall. Very tiny, very tiny. And your classical face look, you know, large eyes, not a prominent nose, very small mouth. And it was probably because I was in a dark bedroom, you know, and I like to sleep with a tiny bit of light on, and it has nothing to do with being afraid of the dark. I set a whole stage when I go to bed. You know, ritual. And I took TM in college and I've trained myself to go off to sleep, blah, blah, blah. But I always thought they looked more green than gray, you know, but
little green men. Yeah, that's the expectation.
Little green men. Now I'll tell you an aside again that's important. So I jump you back and forth. That 1969 mass sighting in Twinsburg. You can go to the web and you can find this newspaper report. The police chief at the time gave an interview a couple years before he died, so only about a decade ago. And in this decade was an addendum to the mass sighting in our town. He said a month after that sighting and after the teenager wrote the report to Project Blue Book, Light Colonel Quintanilla showed up in City Hall in our town. And he was accompanied by a small man in a trench coat and a hat. And now that I know more, I say, did he bring J-Rod with him? I don't know.
Yeah.
But you can read this newspaper account. And Quintanilla came and said, you're not to talk about this anymore. Quit talking to the media. Let it go. Drop it. So, you know, I don't know. And, you know, the beings I was seeing, again, about 3 foot tall, classic structure, whatever. So, and they'd show up on the right side of the bed like they were coming to visit every few days, and on and on and on and on. And unlike a lot of people, I don't remember any fear at those junctures. Now, about 2.5 years into this, towards the end, the only episode in my life prior to the last 2 weeks that put me into a fear mode, I recall explicitly what happened. I was lying in bed. I was awake. And it was like a whip of light. Like, it's interesting that this background has changed, because that's what it looked like. Came into my bedroom. And and wound me up like a neon Brillo pad. I was bound in this light, and then I was taken out of the house. And I remember it, Whitley. I remember it. I remember the sensation of going through space, like rapid movement. And there were images that are very nebulous now, but there were images flashing and whatever. I do not recall being on a craft. I've never been hypnotized. But this is the only time in all of those encounters where my husband woke up. And the reason he woke up is because when I landed back in bed, I was screaming bloody murder. And he said I was drenched in sweat. And all he could think to do to comfort me was to wrap his arms around me and hold me. That was traumatic. But I look back on that and I think it must have been ontological shock, you know. Whatever they did, wherever they took me, was different that time. Very different. I'm starting to recover memories too, which is really strange. I mean, I'm 66, so it's very strange that, and I kind of wonder if I maybe opened this ball of wax, because as you know, you and I met in Seoul. I went to Seoul right this year, and I found my people. I instantly knew who the experiencers were.
And, yeah, I know one it. Of them, it's amazing, isn't it? They send off a some kind of signal that we can all immediately recognize. And when the ones that aren't experiencers, like there was an intelligence community person pretending to be an experiencer there. I'm not going to mention his name. I'm sure you know who it is. And he wasn't. And he stood out like a sore thumb. He was lying through his teeth.
Like a sore thumb. Absolutely. Yeah. But we have mutual friends. I can use a first name, and she's out. She probably wouldn't mind if I used her whole name, but Deb and I are friends. If you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. Deb Cobble. Oh and yeah. Deb she said, won't mind if you use it. Yeah. She's been on this show and many shows many yeah. times.
Deb
and
said,
yeah, tell us a little bit about your relationship with Deb, because she's a big factor in all of this. She's certainly a good friend of me and of this show.
Somebody put me into Cero Midwest. It's a private group. And Deb was in there. And the more I listened to her stories, I'm like, you're my sister from another mother. I mean, I can't remember if she reached out or I reached out. We started calling each other. And she said, my God, Lori, talking to you is like talking to a long-lost friend or a family member. And we kind of look alike. She's prettier than me. But we kind of have these features and mannerisms. And I thank her all the time, because I was able to unbutton my cloak and tell her about the things that had happened to me. Because I'm an outlier in my family. We're not going to have time to touch on all the family members that have had encounters. But it's gone through four generations, from my grandparents to my mother and her siblings. All six of the siblings have had encounters.
Now, is this from your father's side or your mother's side?
Mother's side.
Mother's
specifically
side.
My mother's.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more then. We just touched on her ethnic background and so forth. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So, and I will tell you, I think my mother was a lifetime experiencer. And I think it was traumatic for her. She died last year. And she died at what I think is a young age, 84. But she was never able to find peace with the experiences she had. And I have a recall, what I thought for years was a dream. And I dream, this is something Deb and I talk about. I dream in Technicolor. I could probably write a screenplay for about 10 of my dreams, because they're so magnificent and so colorful. But one of my dreams was not a good dream. And it included my mother and her older sister. And in the dream, my aunt is holding my hand. Now, before my grandparents lived in this house, they lived on a farm 4 miles away. And I'm in the backyard of that farm. My aunt is holding my hand in this dream. and something unseen is dragging my mother through the grass by her hair. And my aunt looks down at me and she said, "It's okay. This is what has to be done." So if that was a recovered memory or a story that was told to me, whatever it was, I wonder what happened to my mother in that instance. And again, it's so different from most of my experiences have not been unpleasant. My encounters with beings are, I mean, they're not happy, happy, joy, joy. These people are coming, or these creatures are coming into my room and taking me out of my room. Nobody ever asked for my permission. And I've had to think about that. I'm like, did I go willingly or did I just have no choice? I don't know. You know, I don't know if that gives you a little bit about my mom. I guess I could lead into what happened. So, you know, I had 3 years of these beings coming in and then the one really traumatic episode with the neon light. And then the last time I saw a small gray, one showed up at the bottom of my bed, which was unusual. They always showed up at my side. And this one was trying to pull me out of the bed by my feet. And I looked at him and we talked telepathically. And I said one word, no. He let go and disappeared. And that was the end of my 3 years of visitations. It was that abrupt.
How interesting.
Yeah.
And so you, let me, and that was in 2003.
Correct. Correct.
And I wonder why, you know, you resisted being pulled out of the bed. What would you think would have happened? Did you have any sense of what might have happened? Because I've had a couple of experiences where I have felt they definitely wanted me to go with them.
Yeah.
And it was not something I wanted to do because I had a strong feeling I wouldn't be coming back.
Well, I don't know, but I can tell you I've been trying to unpack these episodes for years because, you know, I have some experience of friends that think that they've been taken for breeding purposes. I don't know.
I have had that experience, definitely. And
yeah.
Now, one of the two congressmen that's been talking about this, and Tim Burchett, yeah, I think it is Tim Burchett,
yeah,
has said that he's been told that there is a breeding program that the military is involved in. And I'm sorry, but I experienced that myself. I was sexually, I had a sexual encounter with one of these, a sort of hybrid gray, in that it was a gray, but it had a human kind of quality to its body, and it was obviously a female. And I described it in detail in the book Supernatural. It's a very, very intense sexual experience. In the room in which it occurred, which was one of the rooms in our cabin, it was filled with people watching this, one of whom was an intelligence officer who I have known for years. And I brought this up with him a couple of times, and he has no memory of it whatsoever, which doesn't surprise me, because he probably was, that part of his life is probably not in this level of memory, and I think we all have that. But it's definitely real, because there was a child, and the poor child was dreadful. It was a horrible failure. And it's not the only one I know. I know a lot of people who have been born in that way, and I don't know how they live. They don't. It's just awful. So it's real.
And it's interesting because, you know, I've grown children. My children are in their 40s, both of them. And I, again, don't want to pull them into this anymore. They both have pretty big lives. And so I've thought about that because there was an episode in my son's childhood. I'm almost positive that my son is an experiencer based on things he would tell me over his life. But so I don't know if that's what it was. But when he was a kid, he would point his finger up in the air and he'd say, "I have a brother and he lives up there." I'd say that over and over again. I have a
Now,
brother and he lives up there.
how often do we see, there's something going on here in the sense that there are, this is by no means the only story of someone who has said, I've got relatives and this is, they're my family. And in fact, in the book Them, I specifically discuss a letter in which the woman who is abducted is told that this, we're your family. And who are we? Do you have any sense of what this all means, Laurie? Any intuition about it, maybe?
Well, again, I look back on, I've given you this historical background of my family, and we were big earth worshipers, pagans, and I almost think that I'm a standard bearer for don't destroy the planet, people. Keep this beautiful. Maybe we're still in the Garden of Eden, and I and maybe they've instilled this in the generations. I told you before we started the interview, I'm a Buddhist by philosophy. I'm not an adherent to any specific ideology, but I'm very spiritual, and I just think that maybe I've been given a gift or a purpose that is yet to become fully formed. And now looking at where we're at geopolitically, maybe that's why everything's opening up for me at this point. I don't know. But it's interesting. So you were asking why they were coming to me, and I didn't know if it was a breeding program or whatever, but right before the encounter started, I had a car accident. I was hit by three cars. I shouldn't have lived. And I didn't get proper medical treatment from my physicians. They never did a brain scan. I've never had a brain scan. But after the 3 years of encounters, I noticed, let's see if you can see this on camera. Can you see this dent at the
A
side of
little
my
bit.
head?
We can see the dent.
So I have dents on both sides of my head right here. I can stick my finger in that were not there prior to those encounters. So I'm thinking, did they try to go in and fix me? Because I had a lot of problems. I'm doing really well today, but sometimes I stutter and sometimes I can't remember words. And that's from my head hit the metal part of the windshield over and over
Yeah,
again. And
so that's from the accident.
yeah. And I think in my case, did they come and fix me? And I've had a lot of medical problems over my lifetime. And I do wonder if I, people call them guardian angels, and I don't like that term. It doesn't work for my worldview. But I do think that maybe these beings have shadowed me. When I told you I would go play in the woods as a child, I always felt I was being watched. I mean, my mother would open the door at 7 a.m. and say, "Go play," and as long as I made it home before dinner time, she didn't worry. And I would go deep into my home was surrounded by about 300 acres of pristine woodland. And I would just play for hours and wonder about nature and wonder about creation. I'd lay on the grass in my front yard and look up at the sky and figure out how infinite it must be, So, but not to get stuck on that, because so
Well,
that
no, but
adds it to,
let's just talk about that a little bit
yeah.
because this woodlands thing is recurred in this interview a number of times.
Yes.
It's where your family starts
Yes.
and where you end up. And the forest is an important part of this because the forest is where the Greys lived when they in the days of the fairy folk, they lived in the woods, in the forest. And at my cabin, they live underground up in a ridge in a forest. And where are we talking about aliens? Or are we talking about something to do with the inner nature, even the soul of the earth itself?
Well,
I
and
wonder.
I like that line of thinking, because I've had a long time to ponder that. So I guess I should go into the last really big thing that happened to me in 2009. So in 2009, well, like you, 6 years earlier, after the encounters in my bedroom, I had the opportunity to purchase an off-grid cabin in northern Quebec, 200 miles from the Arctic Circle. And it cost a pittance. They have what they call crown land in Canada. And I was able to purchase a cabin that slept 12 people. It was on a 4 mile lake. We could lay on the dock drinking wine and watching the Aurora Borealis drip through the sky like absinthe. So I own this cabin. And so for the ensuing few years, every summer we'd go spend as much time as we could at this cabin in northern Quebec. So August of 2009, we were preparing our car to leave the next morning to go to our off-grid cabin in Canada. And my son's then girlfriend was going with us because this is after they started making you use a passport to go into Canada. So my son couldn't go because his passport had expired. So she came to the house to say goodbye to her boyfriend. And he went running out the front door. And I thought, oh, young love, how wonderful. He burst back in the door 2 seconds later. And all he says to me is, Mom, UFOs. And he runs back out the door. So I run out the door after him. And at the time I get into our front yard, in our driveway, the girlfriend, my son, and I are looking up. And there are 9 orange orbs just over the treetops, over the houses, across the street from my house. And at the time that I got out there, they were glowing and pulsating. There were 8 of them that were smaller, and then in the middle was a larger orb, a much larger orb. And I didn't want to go back in the house, and I was smart enough. I had my phone in my hand, and I called my husband. And I said, get out here now with your camera. There's UFOs out front. And he runs out with his camera so there were 5 of us, Whitley, the son, the girlfriend, me, my husband, and his best friend from college. And we watched these craft for about 15 minutes. And at one point, all the smaller craft went up and merged with the larger orange craft. And then it moved away. And at this point, I called my mother, who lived 3 miles away from me. And I said, Mom, go look out your window. And she looks out her window. I was able to tell her where it was moving. And she said, oh, my God. She and her husband got in their car and drove to the top of the hill where we live. And again, Whitley, this is Liberty Road. So it's a mile from where I had my 1979 encounter with the very large UFO. And so we keep watching. I hung up with my mother and we keep watching. And then the craft came back to us, the big craft, and then disappeared, shot up and disappeared. So again, it was about 15 or 20 minutes. My husband couldn't get his camera to focus, never got a good shot. But
that's typical of this experience. None of the experiencers listening to this are going to be surprised by that.
He's a professional photographer. That is his artwork behind me. That's the first Artemis launch at Cape Canaveral. That's what's in the background. I call my mother up, and she tells me what they experienced. When they went up to the hill, she said she and her husband watched it hover over this park, and they could see beings in the craft. They could see multiple beings in the craft. And there was a light, she said, showing down from the big craft. And the light went back up into the craft and then disappeared. Well, came back at us. What she was explaining was when we saw it go away, they saw it up close in this park. And then when it came back to us, it left them. So a total of 7 witnesses. So at this point, I'm like, this is unbelievable. And my husband wrote the report to MUFON on that one too. And we get up the next morning and we head to our cabin, which is a two-day drive, 17 hours by car, 70 miles on a logging road. When you get to the logging road, you either have to go by boat or float plane to get to the cabin. And I'm thinking, oh, great. We're now at this wilderness cabin after we've had this really crazy sighting. please, please, please don't let any things show up at my cabin. So the only thing that happened was a couple days into the trip, everybody else went out fishing and I stayed at the cabin because, again, nature girl, I was just in bliss. You know, I'd be walking the property. I had a hammock that was hooked over two birch trees right on the edge of the lake, and the breezes would flow in. I could get a book and read. But I will tell you what happened that was so strange, and I've never quite figured this out. Do you remember the sound of an old computer booting up?
Yes, sure.
That noise was loudly coming off the hill behind my cabin. In the middle of nowhere. And it
okay,
went on for,
and what happened?
Nothing happened. I heard the sound for about a good 20 minutes and then nothing. And when Chris came back from fishing, I said, "You're not going to believe this either." I said, "I don't know what's going on, but this is all just high strangeness, weird. What do you do?" And then we had the rest of our trip was lovely again. We experienced the auroras up there, you know, dark skies. You can't imagine laying on the dock and watching the stars and the satellites and the quiet. You know, we'd hear a wolf in the distance, whatever. And then all was quiet in my life, Whitley, until 2 weeks ago.
Okay, I think we're going to take our last break, and then we're going to go back to 2 weeks ago, and two things are going to happen. You're going to hear an extraordinary story, and Laurie is going to get a big surprise. We'll be right back.
For years, we've been told that close encounter is a mystery for governments, militaries, intelligence agencies, officials, and scientists to solve behind closed doors. That's not true. The truth is far more powerful and far more personal. Close encounter happens to ordinary people like me, like you, and our families. People like us, with hopes, homes, fears, and questions that will not go away, that will only be answered in a relationship between us and our visitors. Transformation 2026 is not a book about belief. It is a witness statement. It's the story of what happened when one family had the visitors walk into our lives and stay with us and live with us for 3 years. They didn't sit across a table from us, but they came to us in many extraordinary ways. Transformation 2026 is a chronicle of that experience, updated with all kinds of new information. So it's a book definitely for today, especially if disclosure brings more contact, which it well may. Transformation 2026. Get it. Read it. Decide for yourself what you would do if something as strange as the visitors came walking through your door into your family's life. That happened to me and my family, and we're still here. You're still here, immensely transformed by our experience. So get it from Amazon. Get it from Audible, read by me. But get it. Do that today. You know, there's an incredible website in this world. You're listening to its podcast or watching it right now. It's unknowncountry.com. Founded by Ann Streber in 1998, it is a huge repository of information about the edge, practical, clear, carefully presented, not a bunch of nonsense, but the truth about the edge, the things that we really don't know, don't understand, and the right paths to go down to find the answers to those mysteries. UnknownCountry.com is absolutely unique in the world. It's not only that, it's a load of fun to go on that website and just explore. So go to unknowncountry.com, follow the news every day, because it is a great website and the news is hard-hitting and extraordinary. You're welcome, if you're a subscriber, to comment on any story, any podcast. You're welcome also to come to the Wednesday night chat room, which I usually attend myself. It's a wonderful place. So subscribe. Keep it going. $4.95 a month is not a lot of money these days. Should be more, frankly, but it's not. So do it today. Go to unknowncountry.com. Click on the subscribe tab. Help keep this marvelous, extraordinary project going. We need it more right now than ever before.
Okay, Lori, let's go. Tell us your story.
Sure. And as you went to break, I have goosebumps all over my arms and the hackles on the back of my neck are just firing. So my husband was to have surgery on the 20th of March. So this was two nights before his surgery. His day job, because his maritime archaeology doesn't pay, he's a school teacher. So he goes to bed very early, and I'm a night owl, and my circadian rhythms like reading late at night. So I popped into bed about midnight after reading. And again, I think I told you, I have trained myself. Once I get into bed and I'm ready to go to sleep, I start doing a mantra, a TM mantra, and I put myself to sleep. But I was just, you know, settling in. I had put my iPad and my phone on my night table. And I hear a low hum of a motor. And I'm like, well, that's odd, because it's usually fairly quiet in my neighborhood. I live in suburbia, but it's very quiet at night. And I thought, well, that's really unusual. What's going on here? And I thought, it's not the train. So we have a train that goes by anytime between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m. down the street from us. You can't miss that, and you know what it is. And I'm a train fanatic, so I know what that is. It wasn't that. The only other sound that permeates late evening on my street is a medical helicopter that goes to a regional trauma center. It wasn't that. So I'm laying there, and as I'm hearing this low hum of a motor, then I see an extremely bright white light go into my, I have clustery windows on both sides of my bed, and it was on my side, and I see this white light beam go from right to left through my window, and it lit up the whole bedroom. Intense light. My husband carries around military grade flashlights. It was brighter than that. And again, going straight across like this. And as it came into the room, then I look up, something says, look up. And I look up and I see this cloud, this white translucent cloud covering the whole ceiling of my bedroom. And I'm like, huh, you know, this is Lori. Huh, what's that? And just as I did that, something said, look to your right. And I looked to my right. And all I can tell you, Whitley, is I have never experienced terror like the terror I felt in that moment. Standing 5 inches from my face is what I can only describe what your TV would look like back in the day with the white and gray matter. I see a shape. And I look up and it goes, and again, I know what my husband looks like when he's standing beside the bed. So over six feet tall was this mass. And it was, you know, I could see little twinkles in it. It was not solid. And I had just this irrational, or maybe rational, fear. And all I could think to do was I screamed out. I said, Chris, throw your arms around me. And in his sleep, he wears a CPAP, so he flings a CPAP over and he grabs me in a bear hug. That's all I remember. I was gone after that. I was just gone. And when I woke up in the morning, I said to him, Do you remember that? He said, all I remember is you screaming, wrap your arms around me. And I said, something dark and menacing was in our bedroom last night. Like this at all. This is not anything that I've ever experienced before. And I'm just like, how did this come out of nowhere? I mean, I, you know, 2009 is the last time I saw Kraft. 2003 is the last time I'd had a face-to-face with an entity, an unknown entity. There were a couple of little things in those years. Came out of my bathroom one night, sometime between 2009 and the present, no more than about 3 years ago, and watched a gelatinous creature watching my husband sleep. And I remember just going to bed and going, whatever. You know, when you do this for a long time, when you're in for the long haul, not a lot shocks you. But what happened to me 2 weeks ago has left me just terrified. And do you want me to talk about the second encounter first or let you jump in?
I want to just jump in very briefly. The low hum, you didn't mention it. When did you hear the, it's, she wrote me an email. That's why I know about the low hum. When did you hear that?
Prior to the white light coming through the window.
And it was above the house?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. There is another experiencer in Australia. This is what I was going to sort of spring on you, who has had that exact experience. And then an incredibly dark presence appeared. In his case, it tried to take him, his soul out of his body. And it tried that for hours and hours over the course of the night. His story is in my book, Them. And I may have interviewed him about it. I can't recall. But in any case, it sounds like the same sort of thing. And maybe it was even the same UFO. You just don't know. But now go ahead to the what you were
sure.
going to say.
Well, and I've never read Them, so I did not know that story. I don't know about this person. So, you know, 2 days later, my husband has surgery, and he has to move. We have a fairly large home. We have a handicapped guest suite on our first floor because we cared for two family members before they died. And so it's a wonderful thing. We have an elevator and whatever. So Chris moves into this downstairs bedroom. And I said, honey, I love you, but it's a three-quarter antique bed, a 150-year-old bed. I said, I'm going to sleep upstairs. I can't sleep downstairs. And at this point, I had packed away what had happened. I had not forgotten about it. And I talked to Lucy and Deb at length about it. And they had some thoughts. And I said, okay, I'll ruminate on that. So, and everything was fine for the first week and a half, almost 2 weeks into his recovery. And this past Saturday night, I go to bed.
Yes.
You're there.
I'm here. Go ahead. We can see you.
And I said, I don't know what was here. You can still see me?
Yes, you're fine.
Okay, good. Because it stopped showing me you. I said, I go to bed and I go to sleep. I remember falling asleep. And I don't know whether I was awake or asleep, Whitley, when this happened. But I felt something trying to pull me out of the bed. And it was grabbing me by my left arm and trying to pull me from right to left. And all I remember is that I reached over with my right hand and I grabbed hold of the other hand of whatever this was and I broke its finger. I
Oh
felt
my
the
God.
Crunching of a finger in my hand. And the encounter ended.
And when was this?
Two nights ago. And I
two nights
and I
ago.
Tried,
so this story is in progress. It's not over yet.
Yes. Yes. And I am unable to sleep in that room now.
Well, because you've got a really intense encounter going here, and I don't think it's, I think it is a dark encounter. And all I can say is this, let's keep in touch. And folks, if there's more, we'll certainly bring Lori back, because I think what has happened here is we've kind of gotten in touch with her in the middle of a series of encounters with something that is unlike what she has known before. And there's a lot, probably more to happen. So we'll keep in touch with Lori. And when Lori, and we'll have her back from time to time as this encounter situation develops further. So, Lori, I'd like to thank you for being with us on Dreamland. I'm not sure how long we've been because it got so screwed up with the
Sure,
timing,
right.
but there's increasing difficulty with Zoom. And I know from experience that the more we talk about this, especially because it's an ongoing encounter, the more trouble we're going to have.
Well,
So
and that's what I think is going on, because it was the minute we started talking about this new encounter, whammo.
yeah, exactly. That's why and anyway, it's been an extraordinary experience to listen to your stories, and my heart goes out to you. I will send you everything I can in terms of protection, and I know Deb will too, and Deb is a very powerful person, and so is
Lucy.
Lucinda. You all call her Lucy, but I call her Lucinda. Lucinda was on, folks. She was an ex very powerful experiencer on Dreamland a couple of weeks ago. So, and of course, Deb is on right frequently. She was on earlier this year. So we keep up with all of this. And Laurie, you will be back. And I hope you won't leave Earth before you return with
Nope,
us.
I don't think I will. All right.
All right. Thank you very much for being with
Thank
us on
you.
Dreamland.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Strieber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Strieber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.